Hello. This is the Winchester and District Talking newspaper for the week ending Friday the 27th of May 2016. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Angela Ling and Valerie Lilly. Your readers today are John Regan.
Hello.
Maria Head.
Hello.
And Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Tom Williams. The main headlines this week are Legal High Overdose Warning, Trust Chairman Reveals Vision, and City's New Mayor is Welcomed. So, can we have the story behind the first headline, please, John?
Yes, indeed. Legal High Overdose Warning. 11 people in serious condition after taking spice bought in City. 11 people were left needing emergency treatment after taking what's thought to be a bad batch of legal highs in Winchester. In the past 2 weeks, 10 people from the city and another person from Southampton were all left in a serious condition after overdosing on the drug known as spice that was bought in Winchester. These shock figures come as new legislation comes into force this week, banning legal highs in an attempt to curb the use of the potentially deadly substances. Health chiefs have reiterated their advice not to take the drugs, but have issued a specific warning not to buy spice, which is a synthetic marijuana substitute, from dealers in the city. It's thought that the drug has been mixed with other unknown substances that left the users in an overdosed state. A spokesperson for Hampshire County Council's Public Health Department said, "The general advice to the public is not to use any spice products, but particularly those recently purchased in the Winchester area. The chemicals they contain have in most cases never been used before in drugs for human consumption, and this means they've not been tested to show they're safe." The spokesperson continued, "This also makes it very difficult for medical staff to determine the appropriate treatment when people fall ill." Winchester's been a hotspot for legal high issues in recent months, and civic bosses are concerned that banning the drugs will mean the problem will get more difficult to tackle. Winchester City Councillor Ian Tate told the Chronicle he believes addicts will need to be given additional help to fight their addiction. He says, "The city has a significant drug and legal high problem. My observation? It's not getting better. It's getting worse. It's a problem that can't just be banned, but that people need help getting over." He added, "I'm no expert, but I can't see that the ban will make that much of a difference. If I was supplying legal highs or illegal drugs, I wouldn't be particularly worried about if what I was doing was legal or not. I would just be a supplier." Hampshire County Councillor for Health and Public Health, Patricia Stallard, agreed with Councillor Tate. "All large cities have instances of drug-related problems, and Winchester is no exception," she said. "However, we're dealing with the problem as we experience it locally, and our primary focus is on education, prevention, and support. I very much regret that young people are continuing to experiment with drugs and are putting themselves at serious risk." MP for Winchester, Steve Brine, also highlighted concerns at the city's prison, claiming that the drugs were being used as currency. 3 inmates were taken to hospital on the same day in September after taking spice. And Hampshire Police and Crime Commissioner Michael Lane, whose office previously launched a campaign to ban the use of legal highs, said, "These substances affect your behaviour and your health, and they are potentially lethal. They should be known as lethal highs because they can and they do kill people. My priority is to keep residents safe, and this change in the law makes it clear that these are in no way safe." Hampshire Police were not able to comment on whether they were investigating the recent overdose cases by the time the Chronicle went to press. From today, the Psychoactive Substances Act will mean that there will be a blanket ban on the production, distribution, sale and supply of legal highs which are intended for human consumption, and if convicted, this could lead to a 7-year prison sentence.
Trust Chairman Reveals Vision. The new chairman of a scandal-hit Hampshire Health Trust, looking after the healthcare of millions of people in the South, has set out his vision for a major overhaul of the controversial organisation. Tim Smart was under the spotlight when he led his inaugural public meeting at the helm of the troubled Southern Health NHS Foundation Trust. His first meeting at the Calmore-based Mental Health Trust came amid a full-blown crisis, following a bitter split in the group that says how it is run, leading to grieving families condemning it as a shambles. Grieving relatives have hit out, branding Mr. Smart's proposed improvements as bureaucracy and saying more needs to be done. Mr. Smart appeared at the headquarters in Tatchbury Mount this week, flanked by under fire chief executive Katrina Percy, who has faced repeated calls to resign following a series of scandals which hit the trust. He has already faced controversy after rebel governors broke ranks from the leadership last week by resurrecting a crunch meeting cancelled by him to demand improvements. But yesterday, Mr. Smart told the meeting he is launching a review to scrutinise senior managers. It will be undertaken with the support of independent advisers by the end of next month, with families giving their views through the Council of Governors, he said. But he refused to directly answer a question from Maureen Rickman from Barton-on-Sea, whose sister, Joanna Deering, took her own life after being discharged from a trust hospital, when she asked what is being done to change trust culture and poor practice. Ms. Perry told her it was being covered in appraisals. Afterwards, Mrs. Rickman, 55, said, "I haven't heard any real reassurances. It is bureaucracy." But Richard West from Parkgate, whose son died while in the care of the trust, said, "I think he will listen. It is early days. We will wait and see." As previously reported, Mr. Smart was appointed by health watchdog NHS Improvement following the resignation of former chairman Mike Petter on the eve of a damning health regulator report. Southern Health has been condemned by the Care Quality Commission, CQC, after failing to protect patients and investigate the deaths of hundreds of people in its care, following a scathing independent report. The organisation provides services for 45,000 people in Hampshire, Dorset, Wiltshire, Oxfordshire and Buckinghamshire, and employs 9,000 staff at around 200 sites. A spokeswoman for the trust said Mr. Smart has set out a clear plan, ensuring the trust can concentrate on delivering high quality and safe patient care and concentrate resources on the front line.
City's new mayor is welcomed. Winchester welcomed in the city's 817th mayor in style. Liberal Democrat councillor Jane Rutter was welcomed at the traditional ceremony held at Winchester Guild Hall last Wednesday. It is the first time in the city's history when there have been three female mayors in a row. Councillor Rutter, who represents Kingsworthy, was welcomed in by departing Mayor Angela Clear and spoke of feeling overwhelmed at being mayor. She said, "I am very much looking forward to working with Deputy Mayor David McLean and his wife in the year ahead. I'm delighted to have this opportunity to represent the city and district that I love and spending a year getting to know it better." Watching on were members of her family, including her son, who travelled from San Francisco for the occasion. More than 200 people gathered in the Bapsey Hall, which included a performance by the Wainfleet Singers, who are based in the city. Councillor Rutter, who is in fact a member of the choir, sung with them in her ceremonial robes before being officially announced as mayor. Her five chosen charities are Combat Stress, Music for All, Street Reach, Home Start and Winchester Youth Counselling. Mrs. Rutter is a mother of three who has lived in the area since 1995 and is married to husband Duncan. She was elected onto the council in 2010 and has been heavily involved in the community in Kingsworthy and Headbourne Worthy. She has helped organise the popular Worthies Festival, a week-long celebration of village life, and there is a picture of her in her ceremonial robes with frilly cravat and her chain of office, and the ex-mayor, Angela Clear, is handing over to her her badge of office.
That concludes the headlines, and we continue with the obituary notices. The following deaths have been announced. Bell, Robert Peter Bell, peacefully aged 97. Hopkins, Albert Lafayette Hopkins Jr., at Palm Coast, Florida, aged 85. Meeks, Audrey May Meeks, at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 85. Packer, Louise Priscilla Packer, peacefully aged 92. Reed, Eileen Alice Reed, peacefully aged 84. And Stott, Rosemary Stott, peacefully at Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Christian comment this week is read by John. Thank you, John.
Yes, and this comes from the Reverend Graham Bowkett, who's rector of the Upper Itchen Benefice and area dean of Arlesford. And he headlines his piece, "Have We Forgotten How Lucky We Are?" A few weeks ago, I read in the Hampshire Chronicle a letter written by a man complaining that the have-nots had been complaining about the haves. I forget which issue he claimed the great unwashed were complaining about, but the issue itself is not important. I was shocked by it, because it clearly demonstrated a rare example, in vulgar terms, of a lack of compassion and understanding. And what's more interesting is that the Hampshire Chronicle printed it, although they do print what I write, so perhaps pot and kettle spring to mind. I was troubled by the letter, as the correspondent lives in a very privileged and glorious part of Hampshire, not without its issues, but broadly safe, wealthy and vibrant, with good housing, education and community spirit, a place I almost took for granted would possess social intelligence and understanding too, and, really importantly, compassion for those less fortunate. I and we live in a place of great power. People possess the ability to affect their own destiny and are in charge of their own lives. This is not something to be taken for granted, which is why I found the comments so shocking. There is a sociological theory that the more affluent and powerful you are, the more external influences are geared to support the structures in your favour. In other words, your privileged lifestyle becomes normal and weightless. Literally, you forget how lucky you really are because it's normal. After all, isn't everyone wealthy and lucky like me and us? Well, no, they are not. At the other end of the spectrum, you have many places across the country, and in this county, where the population are marginalised, even characterised as self-indulgent or worse, parasitic. Their behaviour adoptive and adaptive, they're their own worst enemy, they're work shy, their plight in poverty the making of their own fault rather than structures around them. So they find themselves devalued, deemed to be less well-educated or resourceful, different, because they've refused, after a long process of neglect, to comply with the social niceties of polite, decent society. To be like that deserving gentleman who wrote to the Hampshire Chronicle, who decided that the have-nots do not merit a say when it comes to a longing to share in the national wealth, resources and opportunities we all enjoy. The have-nots, having the nerve to express through the political process an opinion, how dare they? Jesus made no distinction with the poor. He neither judged them nor condemned them. In fact, he often preferred their company to that of others. In the Gospel of Luke chapter 6, Jesus says an amazing thing. Blessed are the poor, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you who hunger, for you will be satisfied. Blessed are you who weep now, because you will laugh. And this is followed by a stark warning to those who are wealthy. He says, woe to the rich, the full, the laughing, for you will weep. It's difficult to hear that, isn't it? Perhaps as difficult as being poor and having your concerns and worry dismissed because your opinion is less powerful, articulate, or somehow less deserving.
The first of our selection of letters to the editor this week is read by Maria. Thank you, Maria.
And the first letter comes from Karen Barrett and is titled Use the Building. Sir, I attended the station approach display, Massive Plans for Development, Chronicle May the 12th, and was disappointed that the only handout was the WCC design brief. When I asked how those residents not online could study the plans, the answer was, get online. So much for the consultation process. I had also attended the earlier workshops where it was apparent that the majority of residents wanted the register office, former Southwestern Pub, retained and incorporated into the development. The design brief states the intention to consider the relative merits of its retention, but I've no idea whether either of the two architects' firms were given any serious encouragement to do so. The design brief also talks about reflecting the character of Winchester and proportionately scale new buildings using cues from existing buildings. I imagine one way to avoid scale constraints is to remove existing buildings from the plan altogether. I also ask whether the now empty building could be used in the short term while the future of the site is being considered. Corporate Director Steve Tilbury said there was no reason not to, so if there is any group who would like to use it, please contact WCC. It would be better than allowing the building to deteriorate while the inevitable arguments continue. Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
Sir, and this comes from Mark Berridge. My wife and I recently visited Winchester, where we met 30 years ago, and our eldest son went to university. We noticed a petition against a development proposed for Silver Hill and looked up the website winchesterdeservesbetter.com, fearing the worst. Sure enough, the creators of the website had good reason for their efforts. There should be a couple of prerequisites to planning permission being granted in the soulful centre of historic Winchester: compatibility and enhanced beauty. If these requirements are not met, planning should be turned down, full stop. It looks like the public might be the best judge of that. So until we have planners and architects as well trained in the aesthetic beauty and compatibility of buildings as they are in technical detail and regulations, let's get some simple sketches out there for general approval before we waste millions on totally inappropriate detailed plans which will tear at the heart of a beautiful city. There is no excuse for letting anything other than buildings which will enhance the city be built. Money and architects are no guarantees of this, notably as banking new build often demonstrates. Winchester City Council, please make a stand against bad or inappropriate taste so that we can continue to have pride in Winchester. And that comes from Mark Berridge, Le Mont-Epingue, Brix, France.
And here's a very forceful contribution to the European referendum debate from Mike Kennedy. Mike lives in Pine Close in South Wanston, and his letter is headed, Invote Spells Disaster. Sir, I am genuinely surprised by the high numbers of people who say they are still thinking of voting in at the referendum. Do they really not know what in means? It will mean accepting all that Brussels can throw at us as our masters in the EU hit us with everything they can. There are no serious doubts that there will be punishments for even daring to suggest that we leave the EU in an attempt to discourage other nations from wanting the same freedom. The cost of membership will rocket as our rebate, seen as unfair by many member states, will go. Voting for the EU will see our thousand-year-old legal and justice system, one of the fairest in the world, overruled by the EU at every turn. This is already happening with even our highest courts, subservient to those in the EU. Voting in will just accelerate the process. TTIP will be forced on us, leading to US-style healthcare and a virtual end to the NHS. The removal of our food standards, allowing GM and, quotes, unsafe, contaminated, poisonous and toxic food into our food chain. And a declining education standard, as it would allow unqualified teachers into schools, amongst much other damage it will cause. Our national defence will be undone as our Army, Royal Navy and RAF are, quote, absorbed into the EU Defence Force. In will mean Westminster being reduced to the level of a provincial assembly with few more powers than a current parish council. We also know that voting in will mean losing control of our economy, abandoning sterling and accepting the failing euro, along with dismantling what's left of our nation's border controls. In fact, David Cameron's opt-outs aren't worth the hot air used to make the promises. Voting in on June the 23rd doesn't mean no change. It means surrendering everything we have ever known to a foreign, unelected, undemocratic government, which will have the final word over every aspect of our lives. Now, none of this is taken from is Project Fear or speculation. The bulk of it's taken from the EU's own documents and why the insiders dare not say much about what a Remain vote will mean.
And on a completely different subject, Kelvin Beer's letter concerns cathedral charges. Sir, I think the debate about the scandal of Winchester Cathedral charging for entry may have died down, but I hope I may relight the candle, so to speak. Wells Cathedral has now dropped charging and introduced a welcome, please donate if you can system. This was such a pleasant surprise, and we so enjoyed our visit, and did in fact choose to donate. How long do we have to bypass the cathedral in Winchester on principle until they see the light? Kelvin Beer, Nettleston Lane, St Helens, Isle of Wight.
And another letter on a cathedral theme from Anne Scott. Sir, on May Day, our neighbours, Winchester Cathedral, filled their front garden with mechanical organs of all shapes and sizes. The following week it was Morris dancers and the nasal squawking of Punch and Judy just over the fence. All are delightful to watch and listen to for half an hour. Not so much fun if you can't walk away, but we know we are lucky to live where we do, so when the noise gets too much to enjoy our garden, we just retreat indoors and shut the windows. No such luck the following weekend. Our neighbours decided to throw a raucous 60-hour party. True, they did let us know about it as they were putting up the tent. Their letter said it would not affect us in any way. That could only be true if we were stone deaf. The continuous music was so loud it penetrated every room in our house and drowned conversation, TVs and radios. Polite requests to turn it down fell on deaf ears, pun intended. It was more muted after 11:30 p.m, but we could still hear the bass at 4:30 a.m, and it started up again at 7 a.m. I hear 32 bands were involved. Boomtown comes to the city centre. Neighbours from hell, and all in the name of religion. And that comes from Anne Scott, Great Minster Street, Winchester.
Sort out our city, says Chris Mitchell of Shawford. Sir, congratulations to those city councillors who've recently been elected. Now, step up and sort Winchester out. You have the biggest challenge of a generation. Our great city is rotting, and we need you to make good quality decisions fast. Chesil Street, derelict buildings and surface car park, poor quality market, untidy streets, huge numbers of boarded up shops, oversupply of restaurants, terminal decline of the Brooks Centre, car parking and traffic congestion, Friar's Gate old surgery and car park, etc., etc. It goes on and on. We need leadership and a plan, unity and inspiration.
Sir, contrary to Mr. Wyman's and Councillor Byrne's assertions that more parking and more cars would be good for business, evidence from cities such as York show clearly that pedestrianisation and less cars are the best way to increase city centre business, Chronicle May the 12th. The one thing that ruins the quality of life in Winchester is the traffic and its associated smog. At this time, with the Silver Hill and Station Approach developments happening, Winchester City Council should consult with the people of the city on pedestrianisation and reducing traffic flow. Let's have a plan that makes the city the best place to live for our children and children's children. Peter Cockersall and family, Victoria Road, Hyde.
And on a totally different theme, sir, certainly questions remain about the legal basis for the government's targeted kill policy by drone strikes. The prime one, often ignored by the legal profession and causing bewilderment to the rest of the population, is: how can it be logical to have conflicting moral codes that deem certain behaviour to be illegal under one code but be lawful under another? The government may argue that, in essence, this is a philosophical question, not one for pragmatic man-made law. But pragmatism, the consideration of practical consequences, is being totally ignored by our present-day lawmakers. Lawmaking of all countries should, and mainly does, follow a universal pattern of basic morality. This is more to do with natural physics than either philosophy or pragmatism, and can be evidenced by simple observation. Just as the laws of physics are immutable, the law of morality brings it certain consequences, known by many as cause and effect, karma, or hubris and nemesis. This would equally be the result for unjust man-made laws. Many philosophical traditions believe that even death cannot escape this law. And that comes from Jeff Naylor, Birch Close, Colden Common.
Sir, the sooner the market is moved out of the high street, the better. The Friar's Gate multi-storey car park has become structurally unsafe, so it will have to be pulled down. Now, why can't that be done right now? Once the site is cleared, the market could move on to it. This is something positive that the City Council can do, and it won't affect the long-term development of the area. That comes from Tony Burrows, who lives in St Swithin Street here in Winchester.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can telephone 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Looking into the past, we begin with news from 200 years ago. Thank you, Mariah.
And 200 years ago, May the 27th, 1816... meeting discusses Duke's gift. Yesterday, an adjourned meeting was held at the Mansion House, the Lord Mayor in the chair, for the purpose of considering the best means of completing a magnificent piece of plate to be presented to the Duke of Wellington, descriptive of the battles in which he has been so gloriously engaged, but more particularly to hand down to posterity some appropriate memento of the decisive victory of Waterloo. The resolutions of the former meetings were yesterday agreed to, the substance of which is that a piece of plate formed as a column of about 6 feet high be prepared by the best artists. Tea, silk and nankeens from China. Oh, I do beg your pardon. There was no title for the second item. The China fleet has brought home upwards of £1 million of Bohea tea and about 19 millions and a half of Congou. The whole of the cargoes of tea amount to nearly £18 million of pounds on the company's account, besides upwards of 28,000 boxes and chests in private trade and privilege. They have also brought 307 bales of raw silk containing 31,047 pounds and nearly 118,000 pieces of nankeens.
100 years ago, May the 27th, 1916, all able-bodied men are called up. His Majesty the King has addressed the following message to his people. To enable our country to organise more effectively its military resources in the present great struggle for the cause of civilisation, I have, acting on the advice of my ministers, deemed it necessary to enrol every able-bodied man between the ages of 18 and 41. I desire to take this opportunity of expressing to my people my recognition and appreciation of the splendid patriotism and self-sacrifice which they have displayed in raising by voluntary enlistment since the commencement of the war no less than 5,041,000 men. Approval for Daylight Saving Time. The Daylight Saving Act, which came into force on Sunday last, has been received locally with expressions of approval by the people generally. Some confusion was caused on Monday, owing, we understand, to the hooters going an hour before time to warn the workmen, and some men found themselves at work an hour before it was necessary. But since then, everybody has settled down to the altered timetable. The local farmers are also coming into line quicker than was expected. Where labourers have children at school and women working in the fields, it was found impossible to work on the old timetable, as the children were home for dinner an hour before it was ready.
Now here are two pieces from 50 years ago, May the 28th, 1966. First one, prisoners from Parkhurst in escape. Nine prisoners serving long terms at Parkhurst Prison, which is Britain's toughest, escaped into the Hampshire countryside around Bishop's Waltham on Wednesday afternoon after overpowering guards and stopping the coach in which they were travelling to Portsmouth. Four were recaptured within a few hours and another in Bishop's Waltham on Friday afternoon. In the biggest ever manhunt in Hampshire, 150 police from Hampshire, Southampton, Portsmouth and West Sussex forces, aided by two helicopters from the Royal Air Force base at Thorney Island and 20 tracker dogs, were quickly assembled, and the Bishop's Waltham area was sealed off. Warning went out from the police that the men had records of violence and could use force to resist capture. People were advised to secure their homes and immobilise their vehicles overnight. Slightly less dramatically, the second piece, Princess to open new police headquarters. Her Royal Highness Princess Margaret will be making history when she officially opens the new £400,000 headquarters of the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary at West Hill, Winchester, on Wednesday morning. For not only will this be one of the very rare visits by royalty to a police headquarters, it will also be the first occasion on which a member of the royal family has opened such an establishment. The princess will be spending just over an hour and a half at Winchester prior to travelling on to Eastleigh, where she'll be the guest of the borough council at a civic luncheon in the town hall.
And there are two items from 25 years ago, May the 24th, 1991. Planning for housing. A housing project for the Winchester single homeless is in the early planning stages, following a 1990 study into homelessness by the Winchester Housing Needs Group. Proposals to help meet single people's specific requirements were discussed at the City Council's Housing Committee meeting. The Moorside project, which originated in discussions between St John's Winchester Charity and Winchester City Council Housing Department, is intended to fill the void which will be left when the Victoria Hospital project closes. Land jointly owned by the charity and the council has been identified as suitable at the junction of Union Street and North Walls. And the second item is titled Woodland Costs Just £1. Eastleigh Council has bought 6 acres of woodland at Butlocks Heath for the knockdown price of just £1. In one of his last official duties as the Mayor of Eastleigh, Mr Peter Hoadley received the title deeds to the land from Paul Donohoe, Bovis Homes Area Land Director, on the 14th of May in exchange for a £1 coin. The woodland forms part of a 10-acre beauty spot known locally as the Bunny. It will be retained and managed by the Itchin Hamble Countryside Project based at Eastleigh Borough Council with assistance from local people.
Hampshire Chronicle comment this week is read by Daphne and will be followed by First Person, read by Mariah. Thank you, Daphne.
Could ban worsen legal high problem? It is a law that has been beset by delays and one that even experts in the field don't believe will have the desired effect. Winchester has endured a long-running battle with the scourge of so-called legal highs. Legal or not, it seems the war waged on drugs of any sort is always going to be a challenging one. Of course, we have to take what action we can, shutting the shops, arresting those found supplying, redoubling efforts to rid it from our streets. But as long as there is the demand, it will be supplied. The fear is that simply banning the drugs, formerly known as legal highs, as this week's legislation will aim to do, will make them even more dangerous. Our exclusive front page this week can only add weight to that argument. County experts say that the drug that was taken for a quick fix had been adulterated to the point where the effect of it was unpredictable, potentially fatal. If that prospect isn't enough to deter users from taking these drugs, then what hope is there for any sort of legislation will? Not for one moment can we bemoan the efforts by the authorities to do something, but we have to ask, is legislation the answer? Would education and treatment be better? It risks the problem going underground and increases the chance of people with addictions ending up the same way.
And First Person this week is written by Joanna Lewis. What on earth would be the words of Tim Peake last week if he had looked down from his portal in space and honed in on his home county? For he would not have been able to miss the sight of the gigantic plans unveiled for the station area in Winchester. Meanwhile, judging by the feelings of many locals, they are asking themselves something similar. What planet are these curious creatures from that call themselves architects? And will they be visiting us long? We have another set of designs, I use that term in the loosest sense, for a small historic market town with diverse low-level buildings straddling at least 10 centuries, nestling in a valley surrounded by a green and pleasant land. This time the plans are for the first buildings which commuters, visitors and residents will see as they come into Winchester. These appear to be modelled on the scale of Chernobyl and the aesthetic appeal of a shopping trolley. They certainly have disaster stamped across them. If anyone has not seen them yet and you are of a nervous disposition, then avert your gaze. If you oppose Silver Hill for similar reasons, then do not operate heavy machinery after viewing them. What these plans should carry with them is a warning: may contain nuts. No wonder the public is once again gobsmacked at the vision, or lack of, on offer. Even an imbecile could spot the flaws. Ugly, tall office buildings that dwarf even the highest existing buildings. The demolishing of existing historical landmarks. It's not rocket science, either, to understand why cries of Silver Hill all over again can be heard loud and clear. In that sorry saga, the towering height of the planned buildings became an albatross. The obsession with cramming in cathedrals of retail and office space, not in demand, nor sitting well with the revolution underway in how people work and shop, exposed as a 90s fantasy. And it's a similar scandal. There are no scaled models of these plans. The public has a right to see exactly what these plans look like for such a major development that will define or potentially scar this town forevermore. Using computer-generated images as a guide to what the plans will be like is as reliable as taking fashion tips from Donald Trump's hairdresser. We need to see precisely what Winchester would look like as you step out of the station, yet we are not. To be fair, it's not really the fault of the architects. The entire process has been managed, and I use that word in the loosest sense, in a total celebration of ineptitude and arrogance. What should have happened first is a meaningful, not window dressing consultation with the public and serious thought as to how the site relates to other parts of the town, particularly the movement of people, cars and buses. This would have produced a clear, credible and authentic brief, which could then have been considered by developers and the council. Incidentally, not one and the same, though once again the council thinks it can be both. Only then should architects have been approached, but instead the council as developer goes first to the architects.
Belgorum's alternative look at the news this week comprises four items, the first of which is headed Steve Brine is surprise fan of top pop star. Steve Brine is certainly not the most likely person you would expect to be a huge fan of heartthrob pop star Justin Timberlake. But in a somewhat surprising post on his Facebook page, the MP for Winchester declares that the American singer's new single, which is currently number one in the charts and called Can't Stop the Feeling, is the best new song out there. Justin Timberlake, who shot to fame with the band NSYNC, will no doubt be smiling if he knew the MP gave the song a plug and even posted a link for others to enjoy it on YouTube.
Daring skydivers net £1,800. There are a number of ways to raise money for charity, from sponsored walks and running marathons to bake sales and fun days. The possibilities are endless. But for those who want to get an added thrill, you could always jet up to 1,500 feet in the air. I'm sorry, 15,000 feet in the air and jump out of an aeroplane, although it's not for the faint-hearted. Nevertheless, this is what work pair Emma Cole and Lucy Ireland did early this month to raise £1,841.37 for Sutton Scotney-based charity Naomi House and Jack Place. The duo undertook the challenge at Go Skydive near Salisbury, never having skydived before. The money was raised from donations by customers of Pump House Auctions in Swanmore who sell antiques. Emma told Belgorum she loved every minute of it, whilst Lucy was extremely relieved to have her feet back on the ground. They added, "We both want to say a massive thank you to all of Pump House Auctions clients, as well as our families and friends, for sponsoring us. The charity's been caring for children with life-limiting and life-threatening conditions since 1997.
Mayor makes ceremony a musical night. Most mayors don't like to make a song and dance about their new prestigious status. But the new mayor of Winchester, Councillor Jane Rutter, did a turn just moments before officially being sworn in. Mrs. Rutter is a soprano in the Winchester Wainfleet Singers, who sung at the 817th mayor-making. She and the choir sung a rousing rendition of Parry's I Was Glad in the Bapsey Hall at Winchester Guildhall.
Can I get a vowel, please, Rachel? Another? Spelling can be an issue in modern society. Some of us have issues with their, T-H-E-I-R, and their, T-H-E-R-E, while others battle with effect and affect. But what about pedestrian and pedestrian? Well, last weekend, visitors to Winchester, including Belgarum, were left baffled by a road sign that was meant to read pedestrians only. However, due to a spelling issue or a lack of ease, it read pedestrians only. One observer took to social media to ask if the sign was for people from the planet of Pedestria. And there is a lovely picture of the offending sign, a big yellow one propped on an A board on the corner by the Guildhall, and it does indeed read pedestrians only.
This week's announcements start with What's On, and here are several events in and around Winchester. On Monday the 30th of May, David Good, organist at Eton College, will give a recital at Winchester Cathedral at 4 p.m. Tickets are £4 from the Cathedral's box office on 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. On Tuesday the 31st of May at 7:30 p.m, again at Winchester Cathedral, Reimagining Europe, a non-partisan talk on the referendum with questions and discussions, will be chaired by Tim Dakin, with guest speaker David Fieldsend, Archbishop's European Attaché. That event is free of charge. There are two events on Saturday the 4th of June. First, there will be a royal celebration and grand picnic in Abbey Gardens, Winchester, from 6 p.m. to 10:30 p.m. And also, there will be a performance of A Midsummer Night's Dream at the Bishop's Palace, Wolsey, at 7:30 p.m. Tickets for that are £14, and the box office number is 03306 600541. That's 03306 600541. On Saturday the 11th of June, there'll be a street party to celebrate the 90th birthday of Her Majesty the Queen at Winchester Cathedral Close. And the Winchester Photographic Society's annual exhibition is at the City Space in the Discovery Centre, Winchester, until the 12th of June. And here is advance notice that Hat Fair will take place in Winchester on the 1st to the 3rd of July, and the Winchester Festival of the Arts is held between the 1st and 9th of July at various venues. Lighting Up Time ends on Friday the 27th of May at 5 a.m. and begins at 9:04 p.m. On Wednesday the 1st of June, it ends at 4:56 a.m. and begins at 9:11 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. Now we continue with items of general news, and the first item's read by John. Thank you, John.
Yes, there was a local visit by David Cameron and George Osborne this week, who visited the B&Q headquarters at Chandler's Ford. The piece is headed Prime Minister in Visit to Set Out the Remain Case. David Cameron has warned Hampshire workers that leaving the European Union would be the self-destruct option for Britain. The Prime Minister launched his referendum rallying call from the B&Q headquarters in Chandler's Ford, where he said that a Leave vote would create a DIY recession. You see what he did there? With the country inflicting harm on itself after recovering from the 2008 crash. But opposition politicians have accused him of spinning scare stories, claiming EU membership leaves Britain powerless to protect its job prospects, including the fiasco where nearly 500 jobs were slashed at the giant Ford factory just a mile from where Mr Cameron was speaking. Hundreds of staff crowded into the company's huge reception area, packed on seating in the entrance and lining two tiers of balconies overhead to listen intently to the Prime Minister and Chancellor George Osborne speak exactly a month before the big referendum vote. Mr Cameron told them that the threat to families' financial security and the nation's economy meant that a Remain vote was the moral choice in the referendum. Mr Osborne said a Leave vote would cause an immediate and profound economic shock, with growth between 3% and 6% lower. They were revealing a new Treasury analysis of the short-term impact of withdrawal from the EU, which suggested that between 520,000 and 820,000 would be lost, including 74,000 jobs in the South East alone, and that workers would be worse off by £780 a year. He also said that house prices would fall by between 10% and 18%, while public sector borrowing would rocket by between £24 billion and £39 billion. Mr Cameron told the audience, "This could be, for the first time in history, a recession brought on ourselves. As I stand here in B&Q, it would be a DIY recession." The men stayed briefly to take questions from the audience and media, but left before many had got their say. The one who did was the firm's retail director, Damien McLaughlin, who asked the Prime Minister, "Do you believe there's enough unbiased and uncomplicated information for the public to make a decision?" Mr Cameron replied, "Yes, it's a very big democratic debate, and we've had opinions from all sorts of people."
Dog shelter battles on. A popular Stubbington animal shelter that took in dogs found dumped in Winchester has insisted it will remain open, despite suffering a cash shortage. Managers at Stubbington Ark have launched crunch talks to discuss how they can meet increasing demands on the centre caused by fluctuating income and thousands of extra animals needing to be rehomed. They have pledged that it is business as usual at the RSPCA Solent branch in Stubbington, despite bosses drawing up a blueprint for major cuts to ensure the organisation's long-term future. The ARC could not confirm whether the jobs of 53 staff were at risk, but the centre is launching a fresh appeal for funds to ensure its work continues. It follows rumours spreading on social media that the Ranvilles Lane site was suffering a financial crisis. It comes nearly 18 months after the centre temporarily sheltered some of the 9 poodles found abandoned on the outskirts of Winchester in January, in what animal welfare wardens said were some of the worst conditions they had ever witnessed. The dogs, in such a bad condition, they were unable to see or stand and found with filthy coats of fur gluing their eyes together and leaving one with a curved spine, have since been rehomed with new families, as reported by the Chronicle. The branch covers the Southampton and Portsmouth area, providing care and rehoming for domestic and farm animals, plus wildlife and exotic creatures. Staff took in almost 3,000 new animals last year and rehomed 1,500 creatures. Nearly 4,000 sick and injured animals arrived at the clinic requiring treatment, and there are usually more than 500 creatures on the site at any one time. The branch, which operates autonomously from the RSPCA, is supported by around 100 volunteers and has a network of charity shops, including those in Shirley and Fareham. It is self-funded, primarily from local fundraising. A spokeswoman for the centre said, "For the past few years, we have faced increasing demands on services and, like other charities, had to face a fluctuating income, mainly due to the volatility of legacy income. We are not in a crisis scenario, but are currently in the process of developing a long-term plan to ensure that the centre is being run in the most efficient way possible. We are looking at various ways of saving money and still continue the care we provide to animals in the area, but no definite decision has yet been made about how this will be done." She said bosses are putting together a programme of fundraising events and activities to raise money and said, "In the meantime, we continue to rescue, rehome and care for the many animals in need in the region." And there are three photos with this article. One is of the centre itself, and there are two, one of the dogs which were dumped in January, I think it was, and another one of the dogs looking so much better, looking healthy and happy and probably rehomed.
Dad's support for donor campaign. The grateful father of a Winchester teenager who underwent a potentially life-saving stem cell transplant following a huge international campaign is backing a major drive to tackle a severe national shortage of donors. Schoolgirl Zara Alsheikh is recovering in hospital after undergoing a successful bone marrow transplant, hoped to cure her leukemia, following an agonising wait to find a donor. Now her father, Lua, is supporting a major campaign urging mixed race or ethnic minority backgrounds to step forward as donors and plug the shortfall. It comes after figures reveal that people from those backgrounds have unfair survival odds due to a lack of stem cell donors with the same heritage. As previously reported, Zara, 13, of Nightingale Close, who is of mixed English and Iraqi heritage, underwent the operation at University College London following a huge Hampshire Chronicle back drive and social media campaign to save her. Earlier this month, a donor from outside of the UK was found. New figures from the Anthony Nolan and NHS Stem Cell Registry show that demand for donors from people of Black, Asian and minority ethnic community outstrips those from those backgrounds signing up. Out of 133,367 signing up in 2015, just 0.6% were of African descent, 1.9% were African Caribbean, and 0.5% were East Asian, hampering the chance for those desperately needing help.
Festival that's as mad as a hatter. It's back and it promises to be bigger than ever. Hatfair has announced its festival programme for the summer, with Winchester's largest festival taking place in 20 different outdoor sites across the city. Announcing this year's lineup, Michelle Walker, Artistic Director of Hatfair, said, "We're so excited to share our plans for this year's festival. We hope there's something in the programme for everyone, whether you're a first-time visitor to Hatfair or a seasoned culture vulture. And there are lots of opportunities to join in and really get involved." There will be 234 performances across the three-day festival from July the 1st to the 3rd, which culminates with the traditional Sunday picnic at Oram's Arbour. "One of the special things about Hatfair is that it's completely free," added Michelle. "It's about providing free and unfettered access to arts and culture for anybody and everybody." Highlights for this year's event include an urban astronaut, a grass man, and the UK premiere of an état des lieux, featuring two dancers and a drummer outside the Great Hall. Saturday concludes with two spectacular evening events. Renowned circus company Occam's Razor make their Hatfair debut, along with Tipping Point, in the bus station on the Broadway, a show where performers balance on, cling to, and manipulate 5-metre-long poles. One of the most popular events from last year's Christmas's Woolly Hat Fair returns, giving people another chance to enter an old air raid shelter beneath Jury Street, accompanied by a World War II soundscape. Visitors can also take part in a restaging of the famous audition scene from the 1985 film A Chorus Line on the Broadway. Top street theatre performers from round the world will also busk in the High Street, the Square and Abbey Gardens, maintaining the long tradition that gives the festival its name. Ms. Walker added, "Hat Fair is a melting pot of international artists, but it's important that we showcase local talent too." And that piece is accompanied by a photograph of a rather zany-looking street performer inviting us to step into his caravan, which is an invitation I might decline.
Visitors get a taste of rural life at college. Visitors to Spalshock College got a taste of the countryside, albeit a slightly damp one. Despite the gloomy weather, clouds flocked to the college where lecturers and students showcased the skills and training the institution is renowned for. Thousands of visitors were welcomed onto the beautiful campus, where they tried their hand at the many have-a-go activities on offer. New to the event was the Hampshire Fair Food Festival, featuring food and drink producers from the region. In the demo kitchen, 7 of Hampshire's leading chefs cooked up a storm, including Andy McKenzie from Leinston House, Luke Holder from Limewood, Luke Matthews from Chewton Glen, and James Golding from The Pig. For the more active visitors, there was a chance to scale the college's impressive climbing wall, while sharpshooters took aim with laser and pigeon shooting. Tree climbers were hoisted up an oak tree, and budding equestrians got to climb atop a pony. Principal Tim Jackson said, "Countryside Day is our showcase event, and we're always very proud to open the door to our beautiful campus. The facilities we have here are first class, but as always, it is our expert lecturers and students who have made the event the success it is. It is wonderful to see them showcase the skills they have learned here, as so many adults and children try their hand at something new. We want visitors to see and experience the huge opportunities the countryside offers, career and leisure-wise. When not trying their hand at an activity, visitors could sit back and enjoy any number of displays and entertainment. These ranged from sheep shearing to calf leading, gun dogs to milking. With music supplied, courtesy of Ocean Brass Band, Crestwood Steel Band and New Forest Yokels." And there are several photos with this article, all of very young children having a wonderful time with cows and plants, despite the rain.
Crowds pack region to see iconic engine. Hundreds stand by railway lines to catch a glimpse of the Flying Scotsman. Many described it as a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to see a unique piece of Britain's heritage. Hundreds of passengers stood beside railway lines across Hampshire to catch a glimpse of the famous Flying Scotsman as she thundered through the county on her nationwide tour. The 92-year-old steam engine is literally back on track after a 10-year restoration scheme that cost more than £4 million. Even the atrocious weather did not deter the most hardy of spotters as crowds grabbed every vantage point, packing out railway bridges and pushing phones through railings to capture the moment on camera. Patiently waiting in the pouring rain, the fans of the iconic steamer were not even tempted to call it a day when news filtered through that she had been delayed leaving Salisbury. In Southampton, a blast of her whistle told spectators that the powerful locomotive was about to pass through the city's main railway station. Scores of arms were raised in unison as people lined the route, lifting their iPads and mobile phones to capture the moment on film. The steam train also made an unscheduled stop at Swatheling. Clive Johnson had turned out with his son and was treated to a good look at the engine when it was forced to stop after fears that there were trespassers on the line. Mr. Johnson said, "The red light came on and so it had to wait. We were told it was due to some people who were too close to the line up ahead. It meant we got a really good look, though." Earlier, enthusiasts had gathered in Test Lane Redbridge to see the train complete the Romsey to Southampton leg of her journey. Some walked across the track and took up positions in the Lower Test Nature Reserve. It took just seconds for the train to thunder past, not intending to stop at stations in the county, but providing spectators with the opportunity to see her steam past. The Flying Scotsman became the first railway engine in the UK to achieve the then remarkable speed of 100 miles per hour in 1934. Built in 1923, she travelled 2 million miles during her working life, steaming her way into the nation's heart. But she was retired in 1963, providing many of the enthusiasts on Saturday with their first glimpse of a steam train. The Flying Scotsman is due back in Hampshire next Saturday for another chug around the county as part of a series of special tours. And there are several photographs of people, poor things, wrapped up with hoods up, looking absolutely frozen and dripping wet, but they've all got their iPhones and iPads, and there is a marvellous picture of the Flying Scotsman herself on the track, passing by, looking as good as new.
Now, in contrast to the positivity around Winchester Hat Fair, here's another local event which seems to be having problems. The headline, Horse Fair Downturn. Hundreds of people packed a Hampshire village to buy and trade their equine wares. But numbers at the annual Wickham Horse Fair last Friday were described as disappointing, with many citing economic hardship as one of the main factors in the poor attendance. The 800-year-old event is attended by traveller families from all over the country, as well as Hampshire locals coming to watch the horses being shown up and down Winchester Road. Organiser Jessie Goddard represents the traveller community and is their link with the police and trading standards, attending all meetings in the run-up to the event. He said, "I'm 57. And I've been to the fair every single year, but never in my life have I seen such a low turnout. The money moving around today is very little, if any at all. Last year there were more horses, more people, and more trade." Marie Smith from Southampton has also been going to the fair for years and put the downturn in trade to the cost of keeping horses. She said, "It's the feeding and maintenance and the space. I just don't think people can afford it at the moment." The RSPCA's specialist equine team was also on hand to check on animal welfare at the event, and their spokeswoman, Kathy Hyde, reported, "In general, it's a good atmosphere, but we have noticed a number of welfare concerns with horses' hooves not getting the required care, so we've been out and about giving advice." That's accompanied by a rather remarkable photograph of horse boxes and loose horses themselves lining the narrow streets of Wickham, with a burly chap on a large horse riding bareback right down the middle.
Exotic pet fear. Wildcats, crocodiles and even boars are being kept by households and businesses throughout Hampshire. Lions, wolves and deadly venomous snakes are among thousands of dangerous animals being kept on private properties in the UK, figures have revealed. More than 100 councils across the country have given people licences to keep a host of deadly animals, including authorities in Hampshire. In Winchester, the City Council has approved licences for one ocelot, a wild cat, as well as two dwarf crocodiles and three Gila monsters, a type of venomous lizard. Isle of Wight Council handed out a licence for one black and white ruffed lemur. And Basingstoke and Deanborough Council granted licences for 300 wild boar. I wonder if they were all in one garden. Zoos such as Marwell Wildlife have separate licensing regimes. A spokesman for Winchester City Council said applications are inspected in accordance with the Dangerous Wild Animals Act in 1976, every 2 years, by a specialist veterinary surgeon and the senior animal welfare officer. The inspection considers not only animal welfare standards, but detail about public safety arrangements. The expertise and experience of the applicant are also taken into account. Dangerous wild animals licences are granted by councils to allow people to keep undomesticated animals as pets, providing they have the requisite safety measures at their home and pay a small fee. The RSPCA said it was concerned that licences too often focus on protecting the public from harm rather than on the well-being of the animals. In 2015, the RSPCA investigated 2,772 calls received about reptiles, a 50% increase from 7 years ago. Now, in a bid to try to combat the neglect, the charity has released a number of videos backed by Chris Peckham. Chris said, "The problem is that these animals have exactly the same requirements as they have in the wild when they're in captivity. So meeting all their needs is quite a challenge. Sadly, the RSPCA is experiencing an increase in the number of calls to their cruelty line about exotics and even worse, that many are just being abandoned." And there is a picture here of Chris Peckham, who's backing the project, and an ocelot.
Operetta top at the shops. Shoppers in Winchester were given a taste of theatre in the High Street. The cast of Sacha Regan's all-male production of Gilbert and Sullivan's HMS Pinafore gave an impromptu performance for shoppers on Winchester High Street. The cast of more than a dozen were seen singing in fine voice at the Buttercross. The musical treat came as the production completed its run at the Theatre Royal Winchester on Saturday. The cast sang several numbers from the hit comedy opera HMS Pinafore, which was one of the best loved Gilbert and Sullivan productions and their first blockbuster success. The performance proved a big hit with shoppers and traders.
And here's some good news from the Chelsea Flower Show. Budding gardeners secure Chelsea silver. Green-fingered students at a Winchester college attracted a few famous faces after securing a silver medal at the Chelsea Flower Show. Dame Judy Dench and David Walliams were amongst those attracted to the work of Sparsholt College, who scooped their 17th award and their fourth silver with their garden, The People's Plants, which aims to inspire people to become involved in plant conservation. The garden was created by a team of 15 horticultural students and lecturer Chris Bird in partnership with the charity Plant Heritage. The college have won more than 100 Royal Horticultural Show medals since they were founded in the West End 22 years ago. That doesn't make much sense, but we'll pass on. Owner Matthew Soper said, "It's absolutely fantastic. It's always such a worry. I was really happy with the stand, but you can't bank on it getting an award. It's a relief that it did, and I'm over the moon." Sarah Eberly also celebrated success, having now won more categories at Chelsea Flower Show than any other designer. The 59-year-old from Whitchurch designed two gardens this year, and they both scooped gold. And there are two lovely pictures here with backgrounds of the wonderful array of flowers at the show. The first one shows two of the students, Charlie Buckland and Chris Naish, along with Alan Titchmarsh. And in the second, they're beaming alongside Dame Judy Dench.
Walkers step out to support charity. Walkers, with and without dogs, and their friends have enjoyed walking in the countryside around Kilmerston and Bramdean near Alresford to raise over £600 for family support charity Home Start Winchester. The 50 walkers could choose either long or short walks, which began at Kilmerston Village Hall and which were planned by local residents Chris and Marion Robinson. The countryside was looking at its best with the fresh green of spring bursting through, and roots took in parts of the glorious Hinton Ampner estate, basking in the sunshine. At the end of the morning's exercise, hearty ploughman's lunches were laid on for weary walkers, with a choice of homemade soups. "What better way could there be to raise funds for charity?" said Homestart Winchester Chair Liz Cooper. "The walk is now a regular part of our fundraising calendar, and we are already making plans for next year." And there is a photo of three of the walkers and four of their dogs lying around on the grass in the sunshine, enjoying their refreshments after the walk.
Funding boost for projects celebrating marine history. A new £1 million project to celebrate Solent and White marine heritage has been granted National Lottery funding. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust is set to develop a landmark five-year project celebrating the Solent and South Wight's marine heritage, thanks to support from the Heritage Lottery Fund. The grant for the Secrets of the Solent project could unlock a five-year £1 million investment in inspiring local people to get involved in protecting the unique habitats and heritage within our local marine protected areas, effectively national parks of the sea. As well as being an incredible example of the UK's marine wildlife, home to internationally important seagrass beds, chalk reefs and rocky sponge gardens, our local seas are also busy shipping routes, and they are highly valued as a source of building materials, support a small fishing industry, and are popular with recreational users. Tim Ferrero, head of marine conservation at Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust, said, "The Solent is packed with nationally and internationally important wildlife, yet so many people don't realise that we have everything from seals to seahorses living so nearby. With Secrets of the Solent, we want to celebrate the diversity of our local marine wildlife and habitats to ensure that their importance and the benefits they bring us is understood and valued. We all use and benefit from our seas in different ways, so it's only right that we work together to come up with ways of protecting them and securing those benefits." Heritage grants applications are assessed in two rounds. The first year will see the proposals refined and developed, with further funding earmarked for future years.
First glimpse of new estate. New images have been released showing the development planned for Sun Lane in Arlesford. They depict how the housing estate will look if permission is granted for a 300-home scheme with an area allocated for an industrial estate and an open space. The development has divided opinion in the town between campaigners who do not want to see greenbelt land swallowed up and those who say it will meet the need for housing in the area. At an initial consultation, some members of the public expressed concern over the potential for serious problems on what they called inadequate roads. Objectors said they feared without proper infrastructure treatment, the plan would cause traffic congestion. However, Winchester City Council has said that the Sun Lane plan is the preferred site to meet the housing quota as part of the Local Plan Part 2. A document which sets out where new developments can go. The new proposals, revealed by developers Seaward, consist of a mix of 300 houses offering one and two bedroom accommodation. Seaward say Sun Lane will benefit the area with a new industrial estate, 37 acres of public open space and road improvements. Steve Culpett, the Land and Planning Director at Seaward, said they'd taken on board what residents suggested following a number of consultations. He added that the firm was pleased with how the plans were progressing as a result of the public's feedback so far. He said, "We've changed the plans to make sure the local people get what they want." But John Weston of Jacklin's Lane, half a mile from the site, told the Chronicle that there are better alternatives. He said, "I am totally against it. I've looked at the plan in a lot of detail, and I've drafted alternatives with the help of other Alresford residents. However, the Town Council has not looked at any of these alternatives. This is not right and only strengthens our objection." Alresford resident Dean Gregory said at the consultations, "Well, I'm all for the plans. Sun Lane is where the development needs to be. It's the best place." Developers are hoping for more feedback from the public as a result of the artist's impression being released. And that article is accompanied by an artist's impression, which makes, I must say, the development look fairly massive, but at least it is surrounded by an awful lot of Hampshire's green countryside.
Mac more than twice limit for alcohol during collision. He paid the ultimate price for drinking and driving. The family of popular Hampshire rugby player Macaulay Campbell, known as Mac, have apologised on behalf of their son. After an inquest heard, he was more than twice the drink drive limit when he crashed head-on into another car. Coroner Graham Short criticised Romsey Rugby Club and called for it to introduce a formal policy to discourage drink driving after hearing how the bar had been opened specially for Mac and his teammates to celebrate a victory. Mac's parents have said his death is a lesson to young people about the dangers of drinking and driving. The fatal crash on the A3057 near Romsey on February the 20th sent shockwaves through Hampshire. Mac, 20, had been celebrating with teammates after Romsey had beaten rivals Alresford 19-3, and he was awarded Man of the Match. Winchester Coroner's Court heard how he was driving a Volkswagen Lupo on the wrong side of the road when he ploughed into a BMW 520, injuring driver Mark Penn Newman and his wife Rosemary. The inquest heard Mac may have been driving at 70 miles per hour, as Christopher Clutterbuck said he was overtaken at some speed seconds before the crash. Moments later, he saw the aftermath of the crash and went to help the driver of the BMW and initially could not see anyone in the Lupo, which had smoke coming from the engine compartment and later exploded in flames. Mac's drinking began in Alresford Rugby Club's clubhouse, where he downed a pint, the inquest was told. The celebrations continued that evening as his teammates gathered at the clubhouse of Romsey Rugby Club after asking Robert Stent, who is son of the bar manager Simon Stent, if he could open it up. Mac's girlfriend, Fleur Golligley, was so concerned, the inquest heard, she contacted him on WhatsApp saying, "Are you getting smashed?" He replied, "I have had too many drinks to drive." She offered him a lift home and tried to contact him throughout the evening when he did not reply. It was not until 10:15 p.m. when they spoke again, the hearing was told, that Ms. Golligley said Mac was unsure about whether he would head to Switch nightclub in Southampton to continue the celebrations. Bar manager Simon Stent admitted at the inquest that the club had no formal policy on drink driving, but said its members looked out for each other and there was a taxi number on the notice board. Pathologist Dr. Adnan Al-Badri concluded Mac was either dead or unconscious before the car exploded in flames. Collision investigator PC Michaela Mahigan said alcohol was a major factor in the crash, which caused colossal damage to both vehicles. She said it would have hindered Mac's judgment of speed, ability to react, and hindered his judgment. Toxicology samples revealed he had blood alcohol level of 172 milligrams of alcohol per 100 millilitres in his blood, the legal limit being 80 milligrams. Coroner Graham Short concluded the death was due to a road traffic collision. The family of Macaulay Campbell apologised for his actions, their statement saying, "We apologise for the distress caused to the occupants in the other vehicle involved who were actually known to Mac. He would be mortified at the grief caused by the events of that night. We would hope that this sends out a very strong message to other young people about the dangers of drinking and driving. And there is a photo of Macaulay Campbell with this article, and also a photo of some friends and maybe family with flowers at the scene of the accident.
And now for something completely different. Teacher swaps tests for dance. A Hampshire teacher will be stepping out of the classroom and into a sequined number when she competes in Southampton Does Strictly. Emma Gould, a science teacher at Henry Beaufort School, Winchester, will be dancing for charity this July as she takes part in the dancing competition. Mrs. Gould has been selected to take part in this year's competition to raise money for Where There's a Will, which supports the families of critically ill patients in intensive care at Southampton General Hospital. She has been paired with professional dance teacher Danny from Dance Yourself Dizzy, who is currently teaching her the modern jive. Together, they will have to perform a 90-second routine against 11 other competitors from across Hampshire in front of a panel of judges in the competition in July. Southampton Does Strictly is run by Heather Parsons, who shot to fame when she appeared on The People's Strictly for Comic Relief, for all her hard work setting up the charity and volunteering at the hospital. Hundreds of people are expected to turn up to the event in July, where spectators will be treated to a three-course meal, as well as a performance from a professional dancing couple and a disco afterwards. Emma said, "I have always been a massive fan of Strictly Come Dancing, and so when my name was pulled out of the hat to take part in Southampton Does Strictly, I couldn't believe it. I feel so lucky that I'm able to take part in such an amazing event whilst raising money for an incredible charity. The Henry Beaufort School are proud to support Mrs. Gould's hard work in training for such a worthwhile cause and have donated the use of the dance studio." And there is a picture of Emma Gould and Danny in the middle of what looks like the modern jive, and they're certainly enjoying themselves.
Stroke unit, one of the best in the country. Hampshire Hospital's hyperacute stroke unit has been ranked joint third best in the country. The unit at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester received an overall rating of A for the first time in the Stroke Sentinel National Audit Programme. An overall score of 89% placed it at top out of all such units in the Wessex region and joint third for the whole of England and Wales. The hyperacute stroke unit is the start of the treatment journey for patients suffering a stroke throughout the area, covered by Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust. Consultant stroke physician Dr. Lucy Sykes said, "We are extremely proud of this achievement, and I would like to say a big thank you to all staff who contributed to this result. Providing stroke care to this high standard is a real team effort, and every single member of our multidisciplinary team, including doctors, nurses, therapists, housekeeping and ward support staff, worked tirelessly to achieve it." In addition to the overall score, some impressive individual results were achieved, including 83% of stroke patients were admitted to the unit within 4 hours, despite ongoing pressures on hospital admissions and bed availability, and this is 23% better than the national figure.
And that concludes our extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Angela Ling and Valerie Lilly, and thank you to our copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams. Thanks to our readers, John Regan.
Goodbye.
Maria Head.
Bye.
And Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
And from me, Tom Williams, goodbye. And do enjoy your week ahead, including the bank holiday on Monday. Please post your memory sticks back to us as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put the label inside the wallet, please ensure the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm sorry about that. I dozed off completely. I was thinking about my boiler.
Well, my bit was very short.
Well, that's no excuse. No excuse, Daphne. No excuse. Very, very unprofessional. I was having a little sleep there.
We could have managed another half minute, but I'm not bothered with that.
No.
It's very sad that young man killed in the crash, wasn't it? Yeah. Oh, what a waste of a life.
But it's another one of those funny things about modern life, isn't it? That